I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to I Was There Too. This is the show where I talk to people present in the great moments of cinema. I'm Matt Gourley, and it's good to be back. I recently had a string of guest hosts as I was off getting married, and now I've returned from my honeymoon, tanned but not sunburned, married but not fun-spurned, and I'd love to thank my guest hosts. Steve Agee, Ben Blacker, Maria Blasucci, Mark McConville, and my now wife, Amanda Lund, for turning in such wonderful episodes. If you haven't had a chance to listen, you should really check those out. Their films ran the gamut from Star Wars to Rebel Without a Cause to Ghostbusters to Prisoners and more. Thank you very much to all of them. But now, back to business. My guest today is actually one of those very same guest hosts, Steve Agee, who plays Jeff the Ravager in this summer's blockbuster hit Guardians of the Galaxy Part 2. Since this is a new film, there will be a few spoilers, but we really don't reveal any major plot elements, mostly just Steve's character arc and fate, so it's a relatively safe listen if you haven't seen the film. But you should see the film. I did, in fact, and I saw it with Steve in preparation for this interview. And in I Was There Too first, we went together and did a quick pre-interview before the movie, before going into the main interview after we saw the film. So for today's episode, you get the whole process. Also, among many great stories Steve reveals about his time on the film, such as Stallone in the bridge chair, catching on fire himself, and getting beer glass squibbed, we have a mild disagreement about whether Kurt Russell's beard is in fact real in this film. If you know me at all, you know that I have flawless and perfect wigdar, and can always tell if someone's wearing a wig in a movie, or TV, or in real life. And I'm happy to report the same goes for beards. After the interview, Steve texted the hair and makeup woman from Guardians of the Galaxy, and I am happy to report it is indeed a real beard. This, I knew not so much because I have flawless and perfect wigdar and beard-dar, but really more because Kurt Russell is just the ultimate specimen and could no doubt grow a real beard in minutes. Okay. We recorded this interview with handheld mics while lounging on a couch, so there are a few little sound bumps, but otherwise, it's a really great conversation. It's good to be back. Thank you for listening, and enjoy.
The film, Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 2. The year, 2017. The role, Jeff the Ravager. The actor, Steve Agee.
Well, this is a first where I'm doing a little pre-interview with today's subject, Steve Agee, from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
That's right.
And we are meeting here at my house, and we're going to go together to see the movie. I've never watched a movie with the subject of a podcast episode.
That's before. Amazing. Yeah. I'm very excited to do this. I've only seen the movie once, and it was at the premiere, so it was kind of a hectic day, and there were a lot of people there, so I don't think I was as focused on the movie. I was just so overwhelmed. So I'm actually really excited to see it again.
Tell me who you play and what I should look out for.
I'm one of the Ravagers, who, you know, from the first movie, Michael Rooker, and Sean Gunn, they were these kind of a band of like marauding pirates, called the Ravagers. And, so I'm one of those marauders, I guess you would call them. And, my name is Jeff,
but it's spelled differently.
It's spelled G E F. And I love that because all the Ravagers have names like Yondu or Kraglin or Tulk. And, my name is just Jeff. And that came about because, my friend Chris Sullivan, he plays Taserface in this movie. He's like he's a main villain in this movie. And people may know him from a TV show called The Nick, where he played Cleary, one of the ambulance drivers. And he's a really good actor. He had a very small part in Stranger Things. He was like a short order cook who got shot in like the first or second episode.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, so he's really great, and he was doing... We started hanging out before we did the movie. He did my podcast, and we just really hit it off. And before we started shooting, none of the Ravagers had names, except for, like, Michael Rooker and Sean Gunn. We were all, like, you know, innocent Ravager, crazy Ravager, dumb Ravager. I was dumb Ravager. In fact, James posted a... Before the movie came out, he posted on his Instagram. He was doing like a photo a day from behind the scenes, and he posted a photo of what was actually my prop box, where they would keep my goggles and my gun and some other stuff and my belt. And it just said dumb on the box. And so he posted that without reference. And but yeah, and I still have the backing from my chair. You know, and they had those made before we were given names. So it just says Dumb Ravager.
Does it say Steve Agee, Dumb Ravager?
No, it just says on one side it says Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And the other side it says Dumb Ravager. So Chris Sullivan and I were hanging out all the time. And he would just, I was kind of like his right-hand man in the movie. I'm just kind of his dumb lackey. And I would always say dumb shit. And so jokingly, even before we started doing the movie, he'd be like, God damn it, Jeff. Damn it, Jeff. And we thought it was so funny that if I had this fucking stupid name. And then when we went to do the camera test in Georgia, in Atlanta, in January, before we started shooting, we kind of mentioned that to James, and he thought it was really funny. And so he ended up giving all the Ravagers names.
But is your name used in the film?
Yeah, I think there's one scene, which is in the actual film, where I want to smash Groot with a rock, and I have him in like a little bird cage, and I'm like, hey man, can I look at this little stick guy? I'm like, can I crush him with a rock? And he's like, God damn it, Jeff, no. Like, yeah, I think you hear my name. I think I'm one of the few guys that you actually hear my name.
I'm very excited to see you in this film. I'm very excited to see it with you on our little afternoon matinee date.
Oh my God.
We're probably going to get a soda and some red vines and suck through the straw of the red vines.
It's very specific, but okay. I'm into that.
Anything else you need to let me know before we go see this? We got a 1:25 movie. It's 12:58 right now, so we got to get over to the theater.
Yeah, no, I have you'll see me with the Ravager. I have a lot of stories that will, I think, be a lot better for you after we watch it.
I can't wait to hear.
Yeah.
All right, will you accompany me on an afternoon movie date?
Let's go, my man friend.
Do you want to drive or should I?
I drove here so you drive.
Okay. Here we are.
Oh, there's the ticket booth.
Two tickets, please, for volume 2 of Guardians of the Galaxy.
I'd like a hot dog, Matt.
Two hot dogs, please. One extra large Coke and one red vine.
Just one. Oh my God, it's so dark in here, I can't see our seats.
Shut up, it's about to begin.
Anger. Oh, that's you.
Quiet, dude. You're going to piss everyone off.
Look out!
Oh, you died. This is no fun without your character.
Oh, well, I guess we should leave.
Do you want to drive or me?
You still have the keys to your car.
Right. Well, here we are. We're home.
Let's start recording.
Steve Agee, thank you for being on I Was There Too.
Thanks for having me, man. I've been really excited to do this.
You did a wonderful job in that film, and I really enjoyed the film.
Thank you. I had a fun time.
How did you end up in this film?
Well, I knew I was going to do it probably, let's see, we started shooting like around February of 2016, and I probably knew like towards the end of the summer of 2015, James told me he had a part for me in it. And
you didn't even have to audition. It was an offer.
I didn't have to audition. It wasn't my first time working with James. I had a small part in Super.
Right.
That movie with Rainn Wilson and Ellen Page. And then I was supposed to go down to South America to do a movie he wrote called Belco Experiment, which is also came out right around the same time as Guardians. But due to a family emergency, I had to back out of that project. And then, he was like, don't worry about it. I have something for you in Guardians. And about October or November of 2015, he said, stop shaving. I want you to grow a beard.
And I remember this because you had to have it throughout the entire shoot, but then you had to hold on to it for quite a while, right? In case there were reshoots?
Yeah, most of my shooting was the end of February and all through March. And then I had to go back. There's going to be spoilers in this.
Yeah. I'll
which I think
that.
Are okay.
Yeah.
Because it's been out for long enough now.
We don't have to do any epic spoilers about the entirety of the plot, but about your
about
character,
me,
that's totally
spoiler.
Fine.
Yeah. So we did most of the shooting for the Ravagers in February and March. And then I had to go back in, I think it was the end of May, to shoot my death scene. And so there was like 2 months where I wasn't shooting, where I just had to keep that beard.
I remember how miserable you were.
I hate it. I don't like having a beard. I like having scruff, but I don't like having a beard because my beard doesn't grow in full. Like, if you stand at certain angles looking at me, you can see my skin through the beard. Like, it's that wispy. And it's
no,
just,
it's not a bad beard at all.
It looks okay on screen, and they kind of darkened it in so that wouldn't happen. But I hated having a beard. And, the whole end of 2015, I kept asking James if I could at least shave my head because I just looked like a homeless guy. And he's like, no, he's like, I don't know what I want to do with your hair yet. So don't cut your hair yet. And so I just like was mangy. And then in January, when I had to go in for my costume fitting, I also met this woman, Camille Friend, who was the head makeup head hair a person on the film. And she was like, wow, that's some beard. She's like, what do you want to do with your hair? And I go, between you and me, I want to shave my head. I think it would look cool to have a beard and a shaved head. And she's like, yeah, that would look awesome. And I go, but James won't let me do it. She goes, well, what if I email him and say, I think he should have a shaved head? And I was like, please.
He won't smell conspiracy?
No. And so while I was there at the fitting, she sent James an email or a text. And so I went in and did the wardrobe. They measured me out and everything. And by the time I went back in to see her, she's like, he wrote back. He said, let's shave it. And this was still like a month before shooting. Like, I was like, can we just do it now? So she shaved my head right there in the wardrobe building.
Uh-huh.
And it felt so good.
Did you guys have any kind of rehearsals going into this, like to work, like any kind of that team building stuff among the Ravagers or anything?
No.
Ravager boot camp?
No. I wish we would have. James cast, most of those Ravagers you see are friends of James, like the main group of us. are people that James knows, like Jimmy Urin, who's the singer of MSI, Mindless Self-Indulgent. He was one of the Ravagers, and this guy Stevie Blackheart, and who's one of James's best friends and has worked with him on everything since going back to like Romeo and Juliet. Wow. And so he just likes to have his friends around. And so we already knew each other. I don't think we needed to have any kind of bonding experience. And the first time we were all together was in January. We had to fly out for camera tests, which I mentioned this in my podcast with Dave Dasmalchian that I did for you.
Right. Which, yeah, check out that episode of I Was There Too. It's about three or four back from this, but it's a great story.
I thought going to camera tests, I didn't have the part yet. I thought a camera test meant...
screen test.
Yeah, a screen test. Which, by the way, Dave Dasmalchian thought when he went to do Ant-Man, he thought he didn't have the job either. I was like, they're like, yeah, we want you to come out. You know, someone in production called me and they're like, we need you to come out in January for your camera test. And I got off the phone and I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, I don't have this? And so I was nervous.
Did ask your reps or anything?
No, because I thought I knew what it was. I thought it was me testing for my goddamn part. And so I flew out there. It was just like, I was out there for just like, you know, I flew out on like a Friday. Or like I flew out on a Thursday. We did camera tests all day Friday and I flew back on Saturday, I think. But it's really all you do. They flew us out to Atlanta, Georgia, and we went to Pinewood Studios, which, by the way, isn't in Atlanta. It's like half an hour away from Atlanta. It's out in the middle of nowhere in this place called Fayetteville. And so we're out there on just like a cold January day. And what a camera test actually is he wants to see what you're going to look like in makeup and wardrobe on camera.
Right.
Like they want to test out the camera that they're using. And so that's all it was. It was like they looked at me on camera and they're like, great. And but there were people, you know, like Taserface. I posted a bunch of, or I don't know if they're still up, but I posted some photos. If you look at Chris Sullivan's Twitter page, you'll see, go back through his media section, you'll see a bunch of incarnations of him as Taserface, where it's like too purple, you know, and they tested it and James is like, no, it looks too purple. And he would have to go back to makeup, sit in makeup for like two more hours and then come back in and it'd be like reddish. He'd be like, okay, that's good, but his hair's wrong. And so for some people it was like a real hassle, but for me it was just like, all right.
You're just basically beard and goggles. How are those goggles to see?
The goggles were the absolute worst. The goggles that I'm wearing, Coke bottle lenses, like the lenses on those goggles that I'm wearing are like 2 inches thick, which is funny because it makes your eyes look bulgy, but you can't see a thing. Like it is, it's horrible. And they did a thing, in props, someone in props where they like smoothed out a little tiny hole in the middle of each lens. So I could see, if I look straight ahead, I could see like, it was tunnel vision.
Yeah.
Everything like in my peripheral was blurred.
Pinhole camera.
And like a pinhole lens.
Yeah.
And so I had that at least, but it was really hard, especially in the scenes where like in the forest where it's dark, or even in the ship where it's, I guess every one of my scenes it's dark. So it was really hard. I would like kind of count out my steps in each scene when I was moving.
It's hard enough with full sight to hit your marks on a set like that. It really is strangely difficult. Like
when you're doing it blind.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
And then when we were doing the camera test, I just had the regular goggles with the thick lenses. And they would do a thing where they had the camera on a crane and they'd start really far away and we're just on an empty stage and they kind of move in, they kind of dolly in towards your face and then they end like on a close-up of your face. And James was always like, this was the only problem they had with me. He's like, we can't really see his eyes. It's a little too dark. And so by the time we did that to the time I went back, they had built lights inside the goggles. So I have lights shining in my eye. That's how you can see my eyes in most of the scenes. Is there's lights.
You can tell they're illuminated.
Yeah, there's lights inside the goggle, which made it even harder to see. Because it's like someone shining a flashlight in your eyes that no one else can see. So it was really bad. Every time they would say cut, I would have to take the goggles off and just rest them on top of my head. And by the way, I tried to steal those goggles after we were done shooting because I was like, this is such a huge movie. I want to have something. And I knew we had to... We did a thing as all the Ravagers at Comic-Con in July of 2016 where they were introducing Guardians of the Galaxy and like Doctor Strange and all the Marvel movies for the coming year. So there's a big Marvel panel in Hall H, which is like the 5,000 seat, maybe even more, conference hall. And so they had like everybody up on stage and then we come in and kind of disrupt the whole thing in character. So I was like, oh, I know I'm going to need those goggles for that. So I couldn't steal them after we finished shooting. But when we were at Comic-Con, at the end of the day, we did the panel, and then we went back to the hotel. And like, I took the goggles and I stuck them in my backpack. And then there was a bunch of us, so it was like kind of hectic. I'm like, this is going to be easy. And then like just before I left, someone from props came up to me and they're panicking. They're like, have you seen the goggles? Where are your goggles? Have you seen your goggles? I was like, no, I don't know where they are. He
would have like broken his career.
He would have really gotten screwed over. I didn't know that.
And I bet you could have stolen them after the movie wrapped because it's probably a lot looser, but some prop intern that's responsible for them at Comic-Con.
Yeah, and I think they were probably really expensive. Yeah. And spoilers, we had shot a scene where I actually live. So,
really?
Yeah, in case we come back, I think they still had to just kind of hang on to those goggles.
What was that scene like? Was this a cut scene for the end?
This was supposed to be a scene for the end credits. By the way, for those who don't know, and you know, a lot of Marvel movies are famous for having a cut scene at the end of the credits.
Well, this one,
like, the credits will run and then you'll see a scene, which usually sets up another movie.
This was cut scenes with some credits.
Yes, this would have been probably the fifth or sixth cut. This movie had like four or five cut scenes in the credits, or credit, I don't know what you call them, credit scenes.
Uh-huh.
And so James kind of last minute decided to shoot a scene where I live because the people at Marvel really liked my character as the dailies were coming in. They're like, oh my God, this character's really funny. And they would always say that. And so by the time we shot my death scene, I flew back to Atlanta to shoot for one day, shoot my death. And it's the scene at the end of all where Yondu gets his revenge on all the Ravagers who had the mutiny. He's killing him with his arrows. And then I had a solo death scene where his arrow comes in and shatters my beer.
Was there a squib in
it?
It
was a squibbed beer.
Yeah.
So we shot that like three times.
Did that frighten you?
No, it was so awesome, dude.
Really?
I know how you feel about squibs, and I feel the same way. I was like so stoked. And but it was like, you see my reaction. I jump when it exploded. That was scary. I mean, it was.
But was it like wired up your sleeve or was it remote on there?
And it was wired up my sleeve.
And like sugar glass kind of thing?
Yep. Sugar glass filled with, I don't know what it was, like iced tea or something. And so they digitally removed the wires. But there was a guy off camera and they'd go, James was like, God, I'm trying to remember. He'd be like, okay, just, you're sitting there. You just had a sip of beer and you're about to take another sip. And then you hear 3, 2, 1. And then it just explodes all over you. And then you have to look around like, because there's an animated arrow went through
it. But then
it.
You have to die. Like, does that screw up remembering that you have to die because you're just going to get me through the squib?
Yeah, you're really focusing on the squib. And I wanted to focus more on the squib because I was hooked up to wires. They had to yank me off.
Oh,
out
really?
Of frame.
Good for
and
the
so
back,
And
huh?
so I put on a harness underneath my costume and they cut a hole in the harness to put a rope or wire through. And there were like five guys just standing off stage. And then they would just yank me out of my stool.
To really do any acting, you're really just reacting to a squib and then a yank.
I was more reacting to the squib. I was more worried about that because they only had a few squibs for the drink. And I was like, it'll just take me as a surprise when I'm yanked off screen, which will be great for when I get hit with the arrow. And so we did that like three takes, and James was like, "You ready to move on?" And I was like, "I could do this all day. This is really fun." And he's like, "No, we got it." And then after we shot that, he goes, "I want to shoot one more scene where you're we see you on the ground crying." I was like, "Great." And so they just grabbed, this was really last minute. This wasn't anything that was planned. And so he grabbed the camera and they just kind of did it handheld, me like laying on the ground. We did like five or six takes of me crying about my beer being exploded or like just in pain going, "Ow, ow, ow, my God, what happened?" You know, and then.
But doesn't that whole ship blow up that you're on?
Yes. The ship blows up, but you don't see where I'm drinking.
That's true. He could have just.
So the cut scene was, maybe this will be, I hope it's in the deleted scenes. The cut scene was, you see them on the ship, on their ship, you know, the ship with Kraglin and the one that made it off the planet.
Right.
And I think it's during the scene that Nebula and Gamora are talking. And then you hear crying. And then it was supposed to cut to me just laying there like crying. That like I was great. There drinking on that ship.
And then you could have been in the threequel.
Yeah, but apparently James said it was really confusing.
Yeah.
Which I absolutely can see. But
what kind
you know, who knows? I mean, with the third movie, they could bring that footage back or something. I mean, maybe you'll see Jeff again. Probably not. But
I would love it.
I would love it too.
What kind of thoughts did you put into your character? Like, did you discuss that much with James Gunn?
There was nothing discussed. It really was like, he had more shit to worry about with like the main characters.
But you, in the space of how many lines do you have? Two, basically?
I'd like three lines. The 25 is a quarter. Yeah. We can't buy boots with 25. There's the scene where Rocket's making fun of Taserface's name, and I'm kind of in the back room. Right. I'm like laughing and going, "Oh, yeah." I have like a few like just throwaway lines, and then I have the scene with, "Hey, look at this little twig! Can I smash him with a rock?"
That's right. In the space of those three lines, you really do get a character across, and I'm just wondering what you thought about it.
It's weird because before we started, the day we started shooting, James wanted to do a bunch of Ravager interviews, like in character, to put on like a website, you know, leading up to the release of the movie. I don't think it ever happened, but they were like testimonials. Ravagers giving testimonials for like recruitment, like join the Ravagers. I did. And it was like, "Hey man, I get pussy all the time." I don't know if I can say that, but
you can.
So I was the first one to go. I was the first one to do my interview. And I did it, and I realized right as we started, I'd never talked to James about this character. I didn't know anything, so I just did it as myself. I'm talking in this voice. "Hey, you should join the Ravagers because I did, and I don't get picked on any..." You know, it was something dumb. I don't remember what I said. But then... later we started shooting and I just kind of adapted this redneck kind of, "Hey man, can I squash this little guy with a twig?" Cause that's the way most of the rat, like Yondu talked that way. Sean Gunn, who's Kraglin. So a lot of people, and I wasn't even thinking that it didn't matter what my voice was. Cause Tommy Flanagan is a Ravager and he's Scottish. And you know, there's different factions and Ravagers who are using British voices. So I could have done anything, but somehow I ended up with, I wanted him to be, he was, for those listening, my character wasn't named Jeff to begin with. It was just Dumb Ravager.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why I just decided to make him a redneck.
Well, it's like, it doesn't matter where they're from. They're all just kind of working class.
They're kind of a mishmash of outcasts. Yeah. So I just kind of developed, all I knew was he was dumb. From all my lines, I was like, "Oh, he's an idiot." And that's saying a lot because these guys are all idiots. And then actually we shot more pickups at Comic-Con for the, these recruitment videos. And I was like, "Oh shit." I go, "I was talking in my regular voice when we started, and now it's I don't think they used any of it.
But maybe it'll be on the Blu-ray or whatever.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we'll see.
Speaking of the other Ravagers and Tommy Flanagan, I love this actor. He's been in so many things throughout the years.
Braveheart.
That's the one I always remember him from. He was
Gladiator.
In Braveheart, he was the young groom that the bride they take for Prima Nocta, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's had those scars for years, too.
Those are real scars, yeah, look. From his childhood.
Do you know how those came about?
I think he was jumped. Like, he's... It's weird. He's Scottish, but I believe Flanagan is an Irish name.
Yeah, it seems like it.
But he's Scottish, and... yeah, I think he grew up in kind of a rough area of Scotland and was mugged or jumped or something.
Oh, I love it whenever he pops up in a movie. Is he in The Saint too? I think maybe he's like...
Yeah, probably. And he's also, I mean, he's in all seasons of Sons of Anarchy. He's just a cool dude. And he was the one guy who I didn't really know when we went into, you know, for our camera tests of Ravagers. So he's just kind of quiet. He's a big dude. He doesn't really look that big on screen, but he's kind of tall, and he's just, you know, he's just got a really intense look about him.
Yeah.
And then it turned out once we started shooting, Tommy and I shared a makeup trailer. Like, there were so many makeup artists on this movie and trailers, but Tommy and I shared a trailer. So it was just the two of us every morning getting into makeup. I was oddly enough having a scar applied to my face. He was having tattoos put on and having his hair dreaded. But yeah, it was just Tommy and I every morning. I'd walk in, he would have a much earlier call because of the hair and the tattoos. And so I would roll in at like 6 o'clock in the morning. He's been in there for like a whole hour before me.
How long would it take Rooker in that chair?
Rooker was there at probably like 3 or 4 in the morning.
That almost seems worse to me than prosthetics, because it isn't, it's in every corner of his eye. Like,
it's everywhere.
Every lip and, oh man, that seems... Did he ever talk about that?
No, because he had to do it in the first movie. Yeah. So by the second movie, it was just what you did. It was like, it wasn't even an issue. You'd show up on set and he was always sleeping.
Oh, really?
He'd be sitting in this chair. I'll show you a photo I have of him. Like, he was always, when we weren't shooting, would be sitting in his chair with his head just down. Same with Sean Gunn. A lot of those guys who had early call times, you know, Chris Sullivan, who played Taserface, he had to be there like 3 hours early for makeup, and his were all prosthetics. And I used to fuck with these guys because I would show up and I would just have dirt on my face. Basically, it would take my guy, I want to say Bill Meyer was my makeup guy, and he would just put a scar on my face, which took maybe 15 minutes. And then put dirt on my face. And that was it. And then I would be sitting around going, ugh. And they would have... The worst part, though, was they would dirty my teeth, which tastes disgusting. It's like this alcohol-based, so it was like really strong. And I would gag like when they would first put it on. Until it dried, I would sit there going, oh, God. And if I could ever get away with them forgetting to put it on my teeth, I would never say anything, because...
Even though
my mouth was closed a lot. The
continuity, you don't think you could
see. You never see my teeth. Like, any of those shots where you see my teeth, I would make sure, like, if it was a close-up on me, I'd go, hey, you forgot to put me. But if it was a wide shot, I would never say anything. Like, if, you know, we'd break for lunch and I would eat and it would come off, and I would never say anything after lunch, you know. But usually they were pretty good about catching it. But, I would mess with those guys. I would... be sitting on stage going, ugh. I go, this stuff tastes so gross on my teeth. This is the worst. And I'd complain about my beard. And Sullivan's just sitting there going, I'm wearing contacts and I can't see any. Or I'd complain about my goggles. And he'd be like, really? It's 1,000 degrees under all this rubber I'm wearing on my head. I've been here since 3. He's like, I've been here since 3. What time did you get here? Like 6:30. I had it really easy.
Were you on set? You're in the scene, but it's kind of a big, wide open scene when Michael Rooker and Stallone are having their big
argument. I'm there. I'm in the background. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what was that like, being a fly on the wall of that? What's Stallone?
It was one of the best moments of my life.
What, really?
Because there's the first moment where Yondu Rooker comes down the stairs from the room where he just had sex with a whore robot. And he comes down and he confronts Stallone at a table, like one of these outdoor tables, standing tables. And they have their first interaction where Stallone walks away from him and he tells the proprietor of the bar or the whorehouse, he's like, there are 100 factions of Ravagers. You've just lost the business of 99 by serving one, meaning Yondu's Ravagers. And so I'm standing at a table right next to that and like, he's yelling, Stallone is yelling at Rooker, and in my head I'm going, he sounds just like Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
That's all I could keep thinking. I'm like, oh my God, he sounds just like Sylvester Stallone. And that scene where they're farther away in the snow yelling at each other, there were a few times where, I don't know if you can, I couldn't tell, I wasn't watching the background, but I had to turn around and look the other way because I was smiling so big. Because, by the way, Rooker and Stallone were in Cliffhanger together.
That's what I was thinking when I was watching this, because it's in the snow, and I'm thinking...
It was the first time they had seen each other since Cliffhanger.
They scream at each other in that movie a lot, too.
I know, dude.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And then also, you know, Tango and Cash, Kurt Russell and Stallone. And, which I don't think they had scenes together, but they were, you know, there at the same time.
Yeah. In this.
But yeah, I couldn't, there were times I couldn't even look. I was smiling so big.
Is Stallone's role meant to be more of a cameo, or are they setting it up for something bigger in part three?
I don't know. I don't know anything. James only just started writing. At the time we're recording this, he only just probably started writing part three like a couple weeks ago. It feels like a setup.
Yeah. Especially because Ving Rhames is brought Ving in. Rhames,
that was a weird thing. When I went back to shoot my death scene in...
And Michelle Yeoh too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went back to shoot my death scene. I was sitting off camera. I was sitting, you know, behind the scenes, and I'm sitting in my chair just waiting and waiting and waiting. We got to it very late in the day and they were shooting some other Ravager stuff. And Ving Rhames walked by me and I didn't know any, like they keep everything such a secret with Marvel. And I didn't know about cameos. I knew Stallone was going to be in those scenes that I was in. Obviously, I had already shot them. But Ving Rhames walked by, and I just turned to my friend Evan, who's one of the Ravagers, and I go, "Did you see that?" I go, "That I think that was Ving Rhames." And he's like, "Yeah, I think that was Ving Rhames." So then there were like a year of me just sitting there going, "Well, Ving Rhames is in this movie, and I can't tell anybody."
So, like, did you ever talk to James Gunn about how much he's working with... It's Kevin Feige, right?
Mm-hmm.
And was Kevin Feige on set? Like, were they policing
it? A few times he was there,
or not,
yeah.
Policing it, but, like, just making sure everything's working with
his system? Well, I think Kevin is heavily involved with the dailies. He's not always there, but I'm sure he sent dailies. And
yeah.
With this movie, I think he trusted James a lot more because the first movie did so well. I think Marvel really gave him a lot more leeway and were just like, do whatever you want. But I saw Kevin there a few times, yeah. But he wasn't, I mean, this is, you know, Marvel is based out of, you know, here in, she's Burbank.
That's where we went to see it, by the way. I said we were going to the Pasadena Arc, like, but I had the times wrong.
Yeah, you were way off by like 3 hours.
So we were
lucky we found a time that worked.
We raced to Burbank.
We got our seats right as the Marvel logo
That's
was
That's right.
Playing.
Yeah, we didn't even see what the last trailer was.
No, it's
so
awesome.
We had to get our Coke and Red Vine.
And hot dogs. But yeah, Kevin was there only a few times. They gave James a lot of, you know, freedom, I think.
That's nice. When you guys were shooting the scene where you kind of come bearing down on Rocket Raccoon.
Oh, yeah, in the forest at night.
What's in place of Rocket Raccoon? Is there any semblance of Bradley Cooper? That's done way later or what?
Okay, so he's standing on the back. He just beat the shit out of a Ravager, right?
Yeah.
He jumps on this guy and he's punching him and the guy falls to the ground and Ravager is standing on his back and you hear Yondu's whistle and then the arrow comes and Rocket's like, oh shit. And that's when we all come out and we surround him. So the guy laying on the ground, the guy that he beat up is a stuntman named James Young. James did a lot of the fight coordinating on this movie. He's an amazing, amazing stuntman. He's Iron Man's stunt double. So anytime you see Iron Man in full gear, that's James. He's also the Winter Soldier's stunt double. So he's in all those movies. Really cool dude. Really fucking awesome. You should have, I'll try and set you up with him. He'd be a great guy to talk with. So he's the guy that's laying on the ground. It's not a dummy. It's like, there's just a guy laying there on the ground. And then they just have a little stick on a base on his back with just a red spot on the top for reference.
Okay.
And it's like, 2.5 feet tall. So that's usually
but what kind of lines are you getting? Is it just a like,
well, Sean Gunn is doing the lines for Rocket off camera.
Ah,
he's in addition to Kraglin, Sean Gunn is, he's
the onset Rocket.
He's onset Rocket. He's not a stand in. He's literally just, whenever there's scenes with Rocket, it's Sean is crouched down.
But so he can at least act it, and you're not getting some.
And Sean's a great actor, so he's doing a lot of acting, which I think helps Bradley Cooper, when he's finally voicing him after shooting's done.
Do you know Amanda, my wife, did that job for the Squeakquel, Alvin and the Chipmunks?
No.
She was one of the Chipmunks.
Are you serious?
Yeah, her and Maria Blasucci.
Oh my God, that's awesome. Yeah, so a lot of times we're looking at Sean, or we're looking at just a stick. And it's the same with Groot. I'm carrying that birdcage in the scene where I'm like, can I smash him with a rock? I'm just carrying a birdcage. I don't even think there's a stick in there. It's just an empty birdcage that I'm carrying. But sometimes there was actually a little figure of Groot. But we would shoot it so many times. We'd shoot it wide with all the actors, and then we'd have to shoot it with the stick there, and then we'd have to shoot it again with nothing there. And then they come in with this ball, with half of the ball, it's an orb.
I've seen half of
it's gray, and the other half is mirrored.
Yeah.
And a guy comes in, and this is for the visual effects team, and everyone has to clear the stage. Everyone's gone, and they shoot this orb there.
Yeah, they used to do that for my Volkswagen commercials.
It's really CG. Weird, and I can't grasp what's going on. I tried
think
to
it's
ask
a cult thing.
A cult?
Yes.
Yeah. I tried to ask, a million people, and they would explain it to me, and I was just like,
if you have to ask, you're not a part of it.
Yeah, I was like, I don't understand.
Did you ever cross paths with Kurt Russell?
Yes.
I had no
scenes with Kurt Russell, but okay, I lived in a house that was 2 minutes from Pinewood Studios. And by the way, this is the same Pinewood that came out of Pinewood Studios, which I'm sure you know all about, where they did the Star Wars movies in the 70s, a lot of the James Bond movies. It's a very famous studio. And a couple of years ago, they built a Pinewood Studios outside of Atlanta, Georgia, in Fayetteville. And it's one of the biggest studios I've ever set foot on. It is mind-blowing. And Ant-Man was the first movie to shoot there. I think they did some stuff for one of the James Bond movies at this one.
Oh, one of the newer ones?
What was the last movie?
Spectre.
I think they did some stuff for Spectre there.
Oh.
But it is so massive. It's got the world's largest green screen. It's outdoors. Mm-hmm. That whole scene, I don't know if you saw Captain America Civil War, but there's a big fight with all the Avengers outdoors at an airport.
Oh, yeah.
It was in front of that green screen. But there's also a Home Depot on the lot that is only for Pinewood.
But it's the company Home Depot?
It is a Home Depot.
Are they based in Georgia? Why do I think they are?
They might be.
Oh, God.
But
I have a real complicated relationship with Home Depot.
Yeah, I'm sure most people do. And it was also built by the guy who started Chick-fil-A.
Home Depot?
No, Pinewood Studios in Atlanta.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, this is getting more
so anyway,
and more complicated.
Yeah, Kurt Russell, I'm sorry, I can go on so many tangents about being there. But they give you money to relocate for the month or whatever, and they say you can live in Atlanta, which there's a lot to do, restaurants, theaters, because I'm only working like 3 days a week at most. So I had a lot of downtime. Or you can find a place closer if you want. And so my buddy Mike Escamilla, who's like a really famous BMXer and skydiver, he's sponsored by GoPro. He was a stuntman on this movie too. And Mike knew that I was going to be coming to, he was there like way before I was doing rehearsals and stuff, but he called me and he's like, if you want a place to stay, I'm renting a house that is literally a 2 minute drive from Pinewood. Otherwise you're going to be waking up at sometimes 4:30 in the morning to get driven to set. I was like, I don't care about being in Atlanta. I really just want to be around this experience as much as possible.
Yeah.
So I rented a room from Mike, who was staying in this house, big ass house on a lake, was really cool. And I just rented a car, because it was cheaper for me to stay there,
right,
with the money I had left over from my relocation fee. I just rented a car. And so I would literally, days that I wasn't working, just drive to set and eat. Like, because the catering on this movie was bananas, dude.
It was all bananas.
It was all bananas. Banana splits, you know, plantains.
Foster's.
It was the craziest. It was the best food I've ever had in my life. Like, really? Just, they would always have a fish, a chicken, a beef, or a pork, and like, just vegetarian option. It was great. So on days I wasn't working, I was like, why am I going to drive into, find a Chipotle or a McDonald's? I'm driving to set for the best meal I've ever had in my life. And so one of those,
you're going to go into Atlanta for Chipotle or McDonald's. They have some of the best restaurants.
Well, no, I don't mean like drive to Atlanta. Oh, I mean, okay. In Fayetteville, there's not a lot of options in Fayetteville. And so I would drive to set like almost every day I wasn't working. And one of those days I drove to set and I parked my car and I'm walking to the studio and I just thought I would poke my head into whatever stage they were on. And so I walk up to the stage and I open the door and literally bumped into Kurt Russell. Oh. He was there. He had just gotten to Atlanta to film and he was just saying hello to James. So he wasn't shooting. He went in to say hello to James and talk about wardrobe or hair options. And so he was leaving as I was coming in and we literally bumped into each other and I go, hey, and he like looks up at me like I'm giant. And like, he's a lot shorter than me. He goes, whoa, hello there. And that was it.
It was just, that man is incredible.
He is incredible. He is as charismatic in that like 2 second exchange. Yeah. I was like,
I had a huge
crush on him.
Yeah, there's something about that guy, and it's crazy. In this opening scene of this movie, he's, you know, de-aged, younger. And I believe in some interviews he said that that's mostly makeup. And for one thing,
it's makeup and a little visual effects work.
It has to be some visual effects. Yeah. And that is taking nothing away from this man who is maybe, he's like the paragon of what I would want to look like as a perfect male specimen. Like,
oh yeah.
But his, I think what's real is his hair.
His hair was real.
Incredible hair.
The beard, I believe, was not real.
In the movie?
No, I don't think the beard was real. I remember
that's
at
a
least,
real beard.
At least
that is a real beard.
No, dude.
His gray beard?
I remember going into the makeup trailer for camera testing and they were reshaving my head. And I was just kind of walking around and I saw a beard on the wall. And I'm
maybe for a reshoot.
I'm almost certain.
I just can't.
No,
yeah,
this wasn't reshoots. This was
beard envy.
No.
And
Camille Friend, who is the head hair person on this, who's the one who shaved my head. She does all Tarantino movies. She, I'm sure, worked with Kurt on Hateful Eight. She goes, oh, that's Kurt's. I'm almost certain she said that's Kurt's beard.
You know I have perfect wig dar, right?
Well, you're going to have to watch this again. I think that beard, I could text her right now and find out.
I wouldn't mind.
Well, keep talking. I'll have to actually DM her.
Well, while you're doing that, I will slowly start to wrap this up, but I'm going to ask you one more thing and I'll let you think about it while you're texting, because I know you told me specifically to ask you about a fire story.
Catching on fire.
Yeah.
So that's that first scene where we come in and surround Rocket. There's a scene like a few seconds prior to that where you see it's a silhouette of us all up on top of a hill, all the Ravagers. We come up over a rise in the hill and we're backlit. So to backlight us, they had a lot of lights set up behind that hill. I mean, a lot of light. And dude, we're talking like not spotlights. We're talking panel lights, like 4 feet wide by 6 feet tall of just lights. And they are not LEDs. They're like proper, like tungsten, like hot ass lights.
And are you on like a fake ridge or how was that
designed? They built that for
us. Just the top peak of it?
They built that whole forest. There's like a ton of trees in there. The walls are all blue screen.
Oh my God.
But there's a huge ridge. And we would have to start down on the other side. And there was like 30 or 40 of us, Ravagers. And Sean Gunn and Chris Sullivan, Taserface, and I are all like kind of standing in the center. So we're in front of the main light. And we're standing there. This is like probably it took a lot of takes. He wanted it to look just right. So you'd say action, and it's not just us coming up to the top of a ridge. It continued. We walked down. They didn't use that, but like we walked down into the forest. But we'd walk up to the top. He'd be like, "Cut." He'd be like, "No, go back, do it again." And every now, and it was usually really fast. Go back again, action. Go back again, action. There were a couple times where we'd walk down there and he'd be discussing with the DP or whatever, what they need to actually do to make it right, or the first AD. And so there's downtime where we're standing there and I'm standing in front of a light, like sweating my ass off. And this is like March. It's like 50 degrees outside. It's really cold. They keep the stage really cold, but I'm standing like 3 feet in front of this light, dude. It was so hot. And I'm standing there, and at one point, I start smelling smoke, the smell of burning rubbers, because those outfits aren't...
Burning rubbers?
Those outfits aren't leather. They're rubber. It's like some weird... They look like leather on camera, the yeah. Ravagers. It's like a heavy, heavy, like weird rubber and other kind of... My jacket weighed like 40 pounds, dude. It was all really uncomfortable and heavy. But I'm standing there and I smell like burning rubber, like smoke. And I'm like, "Do you smell that?" And Sean goes, "Dude, you're on fire." And my pants had started like melting to my ass, like they were burning. And like I jumped away and had to pat them down. But yeah, it was so hot, it caught me on fire.
Well, I'm glad you're okay.
I am too. I'm sure Camille has not gotten back to me yet, but I'm fairly certain. Maybe when you do your intro.
Yeah, I'll let them know. But when you opened the door and he was there, did he have a beard?
I don't remember.
Well, we'll get to the bottom of this.
I think he had a fake beard, or those were beard options.
Maybe.
But I know there was a beard.
But I also believe that he could grow that beard in 4 hours.
Here's the thing. I remember walking, because he's the only other person with a beard in the movie. So that had to have been his beard tacked up to the wall in the makeup trailer. And I remember going in and like the next morning, or when we actually started shooting, to Bill, my makeup guy, I go, "Why do I have to have this beard if they can just put a fake one on me?" He's like, "We could have put a fake one on you."
Oh my God.
But when we did Comic-Con, and you can see photos, they're in the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 picture section on IMDb. I'm wearing a fake beard in those.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, I'm definitely shaving after we finish principal photography on this movie.
Do you think that beard looked like your beard, or was it?
It looked better than my beard. I remember going, "This looks better," but it was a lot more uncomfortable. And
yeah.
Yeah, it was awkward to wear that beard. I was glad I actually grew my beard out.
Well, is there anything else you want to add about this film before we wrap this up?
There's a scene during like the funeral, Yondu's funeral, where you see Stallone is on the bridge with like a couple of his cronies. And so they shot that on Monday. I wasn't shooting. I had finished shooting already, but I just wanted to stick around and watch Stallone. Like, sure. Who would not do that? And so I just sat in Video Village by myself with headphones on, just watching the monitors and just watching Stallone. And it was amazing. So they shoot his scene wide. They shoot a wide shot and James goes, okay, Sly, we're going to move in for some coverage. If you want to go sit down somewhere else, you can. And he's like, no, dude. He's like, I'm good. I'll just sit here. Because he's in his big captain's chair.
And is he going to do his own coverage or just hang out there?
He was going to do the coverage, but he was going to sit and wait while they moved the cameras in.
Oh, gotcha.
So he's sitting there in that chair on that set of his bridge of his ship by himself. And there's like an extra in the background, one guy. And Stallone is just looking around and the mics are still on. Stallone is looking around and he turns to the extra and he goes, hey, you know what they're missing in outer space? The extra's like looking around like, me? And he's like, huh, what? And Stallone goes, housekeeping. I'm just sitting. I was writing it down on my phone because I did not want to forget this moment. He goes, housekeeping, like the bridge of his ship. It's like the Ravagers. They're fucking messy. He's like, you telling me you can go from one end of the galaxy to the other, but you can't get someone to clean your ship. And I was like, write this down. And then he's looking around some more and he sees some rust on the bridge and he goes, you telling me they can't cure rust in the future? By the way, I don't think it's the future. I think it's kind of in line with now.
Yeah.
Because Quill is abducted in the 80s.
I've seen these films.
But he's like, they can't cure rust. I was like, oh, this is the best thing I've ever seen. He was the best. Stallone was really nice. He had an assistant with him named Frank. I know his brother's named Frank, but this guy was really like an older man. And it was like his assistant. Like he's probably been with him since the beginning. And we're on set on that Friday in the snow. And we're about to shoot and it's really quiet. And you hear a phone go off. And we were not allowed to have phones. Like we weren't supposed to. Yeah. A lot of people still did. But a phone rings and James is like, what? What's that? Whose is that? And then Stallone goes, hey, Frank, can you get my phone? Hey, Frank, turn my phone off. It was Stallone's phone. So nobody did anything. But he was also asking to take pictures with like Taser Face and everybody after. And we did a scene, it got cut, of mine where I'm hitting on a hooker and I'm crying. I'm like, please, I don't remember what I was saying. It was all improvised and I'm like crying.
This is a robot hooker.
Robot hooker. I'm like trying to brag and like impress her and then I'm crying because she doesn't want to be with me. It's really sad. And I was crying and I was just improvising. And my friend Michael Rosenbaum, who played Lex Luthor in Smallville, and he's the guy with the crystal face who's next to
Stallone.
And he's an actual character from the comic books.
Uh-huh.
Rosenbaum was standing off stage, like in Video Village by Stallone, and Stallone like was watching me do this scene. And he goes, hey, who's that guy?
He's my next Rocky.
And Rosenbaum goes, oh, that's my buddy. That's Steve Agee. He's a comedian. He's really funny. He's like, oh, Steve Agee. Yeah, he's a funny guy. I was like, thank you for telling me that. Rosenbaum told me that like a couple days later. He's like, yeah. He goes, hey, it's a funny guy. I like him. He's a funny guy.
That's the best.
that's the icing on the cake for me in that movie.
Well, we'll end it there on that. Steve.
Yeah.
People can find you online, your Twitter.
At Steve Agee.
At Steve Agee.
And Instagram.
And I think they should because...
I post a lot of photos from Guardians on my Instagram.
And I'll try to get some from you too to put on this episode
sure.
page. Thank you for talking to me about this and thank you for our licorice date.
Yeah, you bet. Bye.
Bye.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.